Welcome back to Agent Investor, inspiring stories of active agents investing in real estate and building passive income. In a business where potential deals are all around you, why not leverage your skills to invest for yourself, your family, and your future? And now, let's jump into the latest episode of Agent Investor.
If you had a tough 2023, like a lot of agents, this message rings true now more than ever. With less homes being available for sale, with less transactions getting done, do not allow 100% of your income to come from residential real estate. And like I always say every single week, I'm not an advocate of stopping to sell homes. I am an advocate of continuing to add revenue streams to your business so that on January 1st of every single year, you've got income coming in the door, whether you sell a house or not. Today's topic is going to be a little bit different. And it's going to be a topic about why we've sold all of our small multifamily real estate and why we're not really big advocates of buying small multifamily real estate today. Now, before I even go into the reasons and before I even go into the topic, I just want to say that each person's individual situation is going to be a little bit different. So I have these conversations with people that are in my Inner Circle program, which is that it's great to listen to a podcast. It's great to listen to a live stream. It's great to get my email and to read some of the information that I give. But to really get a true understanding of what you should be doing in your real estate investing business, my best piece of advice is to join the Inner Circle and to jump on a call with me to talk about your specific situation. You can do that by going to www.agentinvestorinnercircle.com, because while I'm going to give a lot of global advice on why we sold our small rental properties and why we are not in general big advocates of buying them right now, everything is on an individual case-by-case situation. So I'm going to talk from my perspective on why we sold them and why we don't really advocate buying them. But just keep in mind that everyone's individual situation is a little bit different. It's why I advocate jumping on a call with me by going to www.agentinvestorinnercircle.com. The call is completely free, so you might as well get some free advice. Let me just kind of like back up for a second. Like, you know, why are we all listening? Why are we here? What are we trying to do? Well, I talked about the fact that I'm a big advocate of diversifying your income. But beyond diversifying our income, why are we trying to invest? We're trying to invest to make our life better. We're trying to invest to make our life easier. And for most people that have ever listened to a podcast, come to one of my events, read a real estate investing book, what do we all want? For the most part, most of us, when we hear investing and we think about investing, we want what we call passive income. We want to earn $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 per month, each and every month with minimal effort, right? So passive income, there's two components to it. Number one, that you're getting it on a monthly basis. And number two, that it's light lifting, right? So when we all got hooked, when we read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or came to one of my seminars, we did not get hooked on a message of buy a bunch of assets, have a really hard life, but make good money. No, we got hooked on the fact that we could get a monthly check every single month and have, you know, not no work, but less work than we're accustomed to be able to travel when we want, spend time with our families when we want, and have freedom and flexibility, but yet income coming in at the same time. So when I read that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, in 2003, that message hooked me. And one of the big components of his message is that you want to own income-producing, cash-flowing assets that essentially, ideally, other people manage, right? So if you're buying rental real estate, the thought process would be, go out, buy a piece of rental property, get it leased up, get it tenanted, and then have a property manager take care of it. And that's what I thought passive income was all about. I didn't know much more than that. So when I started accumulating small multifamily assets, that's what I did, right? I read that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, in 2003. Took me a while to ever do my first real estate investing investing deal, like most of you know. Did my first real estate investing deal in 2009. Was actually a fix and flip deal that I took that income from and then started turning that income into cash flowing assets, which, by the way, is one of the best ways to buy cash flowing assets. And for those of you who have not heard about our agent partnership program, I just want to cover it really quickly because it's very important when it comes to cash flow itself. In most cases, if you're going to buy one of these assets, you're going to buy a cash flowing asset, whether it's a small multifamily or a condo or an Airbnb, you need down payment money. One of the easiest ways to get down payment money is to partner with us on a fix and flip. So if you come across a deal like most agents do passively, make sure that you're reaching out to me directly on Facebook on my Tommy Caffarella Facebook page. Send me a message. Let me know about a deal that you have. We'll buy it. We'll put up the money and we'll split the profits 50-50. As of today, our average profits on these fix and flips is $80,000, which means if you partner with us on one deal, on average, you're going to get a check for 40 grand, which you can then use to buy assets. I digressed a little bit because I want to make sure that everybody knows about that program. But getting back to kind of my original point, read that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, thought you buy an asset, you hire a really good property manager to manage it, and you're just going to get that money, that gravy train rolling in every single month. And the property manager is going to deal with all the hassle, all the headache, all the stress. Now, why do we sell all of our assets, our smaller assets? Why do we transition into apartments? Why don't we necessarily advocate, you know, buying small multifamily today? I go back to right at the point when I read that book, 2003, what was going on in the real estate market back then? Well, we had a bunch of no-doc loans. We had really high prices. And most people, well, not most people, anybody could get approved for a mortgage. So back in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, anybody could get a mortgage. Prices were super high. Rents were low because anybody could buy a house. So most people were. And when I was looking back then in 04, 05, 06, 07, didn't do a deal, didn't buy a property, almost nothing cash flowed. And I look back and I'm really, really glad that during that time period, which parallels a little bit of what's been going on in 2018, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, where it's a similar feeling. History never repeats itself, but it does rhyme. And I just want to kind of talk a little bit about what would have happened had I bought one of those air quotation, you know, passive income assets back then. And for those of you not familiar with the greater Boston area, I'm going to name some towns, but you know, you can kind of put your own towns into the mix. Towns like Lynn and Haverhill and Manchester, New Hampshire, and Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and places like that, Worcester, back then, 03, 04, 05, 06, 07, were the only type of properties that even like penciled out to be potentially cash flow positive. And so when I looked at those assets and I really, really wanted to buy one, I just kept penciling them out and they barely cash flowed to the point where if one tenant, like say you bought a 3-unit property, if one tenant didn't pay you, you were going to be negative. And that got me really nervous. And I'm glad during that time period that I never bought anything because of the fact that in 08, 9, 10, 11, 12, real estate prices dropped. Again, history never repeats itself. And I'm talking about why I don't really advocate buying these assets today. And I'm talking about why we sold ours, because you get hit with a double whammy. Now, if you think about, like, again, how do most people think about accumulating a rental property portfolio? Most of the time, we're going to use what we call the BRRRR strategy, meaning you buy a property, hopefully at a discount. Maybe you put a little bit of money into it, you rent it out, you refinance, you get your cash back out, and you take that cash and you invest in another property. That is only possible as values rise. Now, as I'm saying this, I am not predicting that prices are going to fall, but I am not super confident that prices are going to rise enough for somebody to be able to follow that BRRRR strategy. Now, by waiting, You know, fast forward a few years when I did start accumulating a small multifamily portfolio in 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, I don't know, 20 or 30 units a year over that stretch, it was a lot different, right? So we went in a very brief period of time, say, calling in 2007, when I'm going to throw out a city name, again, you know, you can do the math in your own town, but a city like Lynn, Massachusetts, that might have cash flowed $200 a month in 2007. Maybe it cost $450,000 to buy that three-family asset in 2007. Shortly later, you could buy that same asset in 2009, 2010, buy that same asset for $200,000, almost 50% off. Why does that matter? Well, when we started to accumulate these assets in 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, instead of needing all three tenants in a three-unit building to pay you, you only needed one to pay you, meaning that you could afford to carry that building if only one tenant was paying you. That is a big difference between needing all three to carry. And again, history never directly repeats itself, but it does rhyme. Now, let's fast forward to today, February 2024. In most cases, in most areas in the greater Boston area, in most cases, you need every single tenant to pay you in order to make just a little teeny tiny bit of cash flow. From a risk perspective, I don't like that. Because what I know about tenants is that some of them don't pay. You know, when I used to pencil this out on paper in 04, 05, 06, before I had ever done a deal, I really had no idea. And you know, you might read a real estate book and it might say, hey, use 10% for vacancy. Well, it's not really real life. Real life is that depending on the area that you own, if you own a three unit, in general, if you're in an area that cash flows, which are some of the tougher areas, you're going to have one tenant not paying. You might be evicting that tenant. You might have to have legal expenses to get rid of that tenant that's not paying. You might not get paid on that unit for an entire year. So when I look at the risk versus reward, and I compare 2024 to maybe like 2010, 2011 when I was buying, I look at the risk as being extremely higher, much, much higher. And then I also look at risk another way, and I say, what is the risk that prices could fall? Now, do I think prices are going to fall? I'm going to put it out there right now. I actually don't think prices are going to fall in the next couple of years. But I don't know that they're going to go up a lot either. Like, I could see us being kind of like plus or minus a few percentage points in the next few years. Does that allow you to burr? Does that allow you to buy at a discount? You know, rent it out, renovate it, rent it out, refinance it and repeat? Probably not. Now, again, compare that to when we first started buying in 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, we got a really good run up in prices. I mean, that three family in Lynn, Massachusetts that we would pay maybe $200,000 for today would sell for $750,000. And every year that we owned one of those assets, the prices were going up. So not only were we able to refi some of those assets once, not only were we able to refinance them twice, in some cases, we were able to refinance them as many as three times. Every time that we refied one of those properties, we took the money and we parlayed it into another asset. So again, we're talking about like, why do we sell all of our assets? Why don't we really necessarily advocate buying these types of properties today? I talked about risk. I talked about cash flow. And I want to kind of continue on. The next reason why we sold all of those assets was age. So again, I'm going to back up for a second, talk again in the beginning of this episode about why are we investing to begin with? Well, we're investing to make our life better and easier and air quotations passive, right? When everybody goes to my seminar, when everybody reads a book, when you listen to a podcast, when you hear passive, you don't think of doing a lot of work. You think about having that monthly check come in, and you think about dealing with problems here and there, not every day, right? Again, that's what we all want. And that's doable through investing in real estate, but not really when the buildings are really, really old and they have a lot of deferred maintenance. So this is, again, a little bit geographic specific. There are parts of the country that, you know, the oldest properties are only 40 or 50 years old. But for anywhere in the country that was developed, like Boston, well over 100 years ago, most of our rental properties are 100 plus years old, which means, and we found this out the hard way, that even when you do renovate them, 4, 5, 6 years later, there's still deferred maintenance. There's still stuff that needs to be done. So again, looking at like the cash flow of these deals, if you pencil out, you know, in today's market, that you're fighting and scratching and clawing to make $200, $300, $400 a month if all of your tenants pay you, well, what happens when a roof goes? What happens when the building needs to be painted? What happens when you have to upgrade the electrical? These are real things that happen. And these are real problems as to why when a lot of people come to us today and they say, should I buy this asset? In a lot of cases, I would say no. In a lot of cases, I would be patient. You know, it's one of the reasons why we give people the ability to invest with us directly, to have direct investment, parking money for a specific period of time and waiting maybe for this market to change a little bit. Again, the future is not 100% predictable. It's not. But again, I go based on past history and I always look at things like you want to swim with the tide and not against it. So I know this is kind of hindsight being 2020, and this doesn't necessarily help anybody that's listening right now. But if you were to go back in time and you were going to look at prices from 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, you would look and you would see, wow, I only need one of my tenants to pay me rent. I can afford because I'm cash flowing a lot every single month if a repair needs to get done, right? So the risk was very low and the reward was high. And you would also look back at that time and say, wow, prices are really, really low. So when prices are low and rents are coming up, the value of the asset is going to come up. It is more market cycle based that there are definitely better times to buy certain types of assets and worse times to buy certain types of assets. And again, this is not to say that these types of properties are not good asset classes, but to me, they're not great asset classes in today. My opinion, you're swimming against the tide buying them right now. And like I said, it's all individual, which is why I said in the beginning, if you have any questions on whether or not this might make sense for you specifically, best piece of advice I could give you is to jump on a call with me by going to www.agentinvestorinnercircle.com. Okay. And so, you know, prices right now, like I mentioned, they're currently high. I look at historically kind of where they're going. Another variable as to why I'm not necessarily a big proponent of buying assets today as compared to 10, 11, 12, 13 is that you are in a lot of cases inheriting tenants. Again, do I believe that 2010, 11, 12, 13 are going to necessarily repeat itself? No. But again, let me kind of like go back in time to tell you what that landscape looked like. A lot of people had just lost their homes. A lot of people lost their investment properties. And many of these properties were vacant. In an ideal world, when you buy an asset, in my opinion, you want it to be vacant. Now, that might sound counterintuitive to some people because you might think, well, why would I not want to have paying tenants in my building on day one? It's going to take me some time to be negative. When you inherit these properties, you inherit tenants, you inherit a building with three tenants in it, you're likely inheriting not only a tenant that's probably not paying you, maybe even two tenants that aren't paying you, then you have to evict, you have to spend legal. In addition to that, you're also typically inheriting lower rents. So in most cases, when you buy an asset like that, in most cases, the rents are not going to be fair market value. Now, add into the fact that of how quick it is to get a tenant into a building. So would I rather inherit a building where the three tenants are paying me $1,200 a month each, and one of them isn't likely to pay me, and one of them I'm going to have to spend a year in court trying to get them out and not getting any money, versus a vacant three-unit building where I can get maybe $1,500 a month in rent for all three units, and I can have those tenants move in within the next 2 to 3 weeks. I'm good waiting the 2 to 3 weeks to try to get a tenant in. And again, this goes back to like swimming with the tide and kind of where we're at today. Most of these small multifamily assets today, for better or worse, are going to be occupied. And again, if you have the opportunity, you know, to buy these vacant, you know, I would absolutely recommend, you know, doing so. These are kind of all my thoughts as to like why I don't love, you know, buying these assets today. So what do I recommend, you know, doing today? Well, the first thing I would recommend doing, like I mentioned, is to jump on a call with me to make sure that this advice specifically applies to you. Again, you can do that at www.agentinvestorinnercircle.com. The second thing that I would do is to register for our upcoming event. That you can do that at www.agentinvestorevent.com. At the event, I'm going to go into a little bit more detail about what we're recommending specifically in the market today for real estate agents that I believe is going to be your best bet. By going to www.agentinvestorevent.com, you can take a look, you can see what the topics that we're going to be covering. We do have events every single month. Next month, specifically in March of 2024, we're actually going to be doing a tour of a 19 unit in Wakefield, Massachusetts that we've just finished renovating and that's halfway filled with tenants. I'm now going to kind of transition a little bit into like why we made that move. Okay, why do we make that switch? And what I wish somebody told me going way back is that you don't need to go smaller in the beginning. And that's kind of like in general how our brains work. You know, in general, our brains work, okay, let me start off small. Let me buy a small condo. Let me buy a $200,000 condo. And then I'll buy a two family. And then when I'm comfortable with that, I'll buy a three family. Then when I'm comfortable with that, I'll buy a six family. Then when I'm comfortable with that, I'll go higher. What I wish somebody told me a long time ago is that you don't necessarily need to kind of like go up that ladder in that way. I'm not saying that that is a recipe for disaster or a bad idea. I just wish that somebody told me sooner that I could have went faster to apartments. And what a lot of people don't realize, and we're going to be teaching at that upcoming event, is that you don't necessarily have to have all of this particular experience to invest in apartments. So I'm going to talk just really quickly about why apartments are better, in my opinion. Each person's individual situation is important. I want to stress that. I can't stress that enough. But why are apartment buildings a little bit better? So the first thing is that the apartment deals that we do are brand new. Like we're building these ground up. At the event that we're going to be hosting in Wakefield, you're going to see a 19 unit that was built ground up. 19 units built ground up. Where's the deferred maintenance there? There's not. Right. So how long is it going to take for that 19 unit to need a roof, to need new siding, to need new carpets, to need new paint? Obviously, all of those different, you know, things are going to be different. But in general, like you shouldn't expect to have a lot of maintenance in the beginning. Back it up for a second. Why are we doing all of this? We're doing all of this. We're investing to have monthly income coming in that's going to be as passive as we possibly can. Okay. So I like apartments better because there's less deferred maintenance. Now, in addition to less deferred maintenance, because they're brand new, we're also going to be able to attract a tenant that is less likely to be problematic. The better your building is, the newer it is, the more amenities there are, the overall better quality tenant you're going to be able to attract. If you think about different asset classes, you have to think from the perspective of who is going to live there. What type of person? What do they do for work? How likely are they to be, you know, problematic? Would you live in that building? So one of the reasons we transitioned into apartments, my partner said to me one day when we were going to sell all of our small multifamily, he said, would you want our kids to inherit these properties and take them over and manage them? And the answer was a flat no, right? So that was one of the things that hit me. So with these new construction apartment properties that are, by the way, in general, in better locations that are brand new, that have more amenities, we're able to attract a more passive tenant. a tenant that if a light bulb goes out, they're more likely, rather than to call the property manager, to just do it themselves, right? Adding to the fact that the apartment buildings that we're generally building, the one we're going to show in Wakefield is 19 units, but the ones that we're focused on is 50 to 100 units, there is the ability to have on-site property management, somebody that lives there. There is, you know, talking about like being in the New England weather, when there's a snowstorm, you just go to one location and you knock out 50 to 100 units of snow clearing versus having properties kind of all over the place. One mistake that we made is we bought these assets kind of all over the place within maybe a 90-minute radius of greater Boston. Well, the apartment deals are a little bit better because you could have 50 to 100 units or even more than 100 units in some cases all in one place. I could kind of go on and on about the benefits of apartment deals. But one thing I wish somebody told me in the beginning is that you don't necessarily need to, you know, have any specific advantage in order to do them. Because on most of the apartment deals, our deals included, there are typically multiple people that are part of the ownership team. And I'm going to go through them really quickly. So in general, you've got the people that are putting up the money, capital partners, which sometimes the capital partners are just us. Sometimes we have other capital partners that are in the deal helping to put money in. At the event, we're going to talk about a little bit about how you could potentially become a capital partner, what a capital partner looks like. But there are people who put up the money. Then there are people in the deal who are a part of doing the construction. And a lot of times those people have a component of profit in the deal. Then you have the people that are signing on the loan, right? So to do these deals, you have to have a certain net worth requirement. And just by having a certain net worth requirement, you could potentially be a signer on one of these loans and you could potentially get a piece of the deal. And for a lot of people that maybe are not as well capitalized, maybe can't sign on a loan, maybe can't be a capital partner, you can be a deal finder. So the last two deals that we were a part of, a 80 unit in Nashua, New Hampshire, and a 70 unit in Hooksett, New Hampshire, we are partners with the person who brought the deal to the table. And just by finding the deal, just by keeping their eyes open, just like everything else that we teach at Agent Investor, by being a deal finder, you can be a part of these deals. So quite literally, all that these two people did was find the deal, bring the deal to us. We put the rest of the deal together, and they are now part owners in that deal. So again, you don't necessarily need to have any capital. You don't need to have any experience. You don't need to necessarily be able to manage a construction team. Why? Because every single person in that deal has a role. Every single person in that deal has a certain percentage equity ownership. Having said that, you may or may not be interested in apartment deals. Whether you are or aren't doesn't really change the fact that we are a believer in this market that for most people, it is better to be a little bit patient on buying these smaller assets and waiting for things to change a little bit. So I guess that's really all I've got to say, you know, on the topic for today. I've got a lot more that I'm going to go into detail in at our upcoming event that you can register for at www.agentinvestorevent.com. Again, what's the premise of everything that we do, right? Sales will make you a living. Investing will make you wealthy. You sell houses, your income's always going to go up and down and up and down. You could sell 30 houses last year. You could sell 10 this year and really have done nothing different, right? You could get lucky one year. The market could help you one year. Your sphere could help you one year and maybe not help you the next. What you want to be focused on is not just selling real estate. We are not advocating that you become full-time investors, but what we are advocating is that you learn the basics on how to invest in real estate so that you could partner with us on small fix and flips or partner with us on larger apartment deals or learn how to, you know, use the BRRRR strategy, learn how to raise capital. All of these tools and strategies that are necessary. The first step is to get educated. So you're doing the right thing by listening to this episode. I would highly recommend going back in time and listening to as many of the Agent Investor podcast episodes as possible. They all have a relevant topic that I'm trying to get across. You need to have the building blocks necessary in order to invest, the knowledge blocks necessary in order to invest. In 2024, there is no reason why you cannot be a podcast listener. There's no reason why you can't listen to most of the past Agent Investor podcasts. Why? Well, you can listen to a podcast in your car, in between appointments, at open houses. You can do it anywhere, while you're walking, while you're at the gym. It really doesn't matter. You can always find time for an episode, a podcast episode, every day or every other day. And what you want to focus on is getting these knowledge building blocks down. When you are ready, I would strongly consider looking into what the inner circle is all about. Because at the end of the day, getting these knowledge blocks is great. But how does it specifically pertain to you in your life? That is a different story, right? There is no one-size-fits-all way to invest in real estate. There is no investing blueprint that should be the same for every single person. Every person who's listening right now is starting in a different place, has different skill sets, has different goals. So the same plan cannot be implemented for each person. If you think that you might be interested in joining the inner circle, getting more individual one-on-one help, which, by the way, joining the inner circle does not cost you any money. We've got three easy ways to get into the inner circle. Just go to www.agentinvestorinnercircle.com, schedule a call. We'll use it as a strategy session. I'll spend some time helping you formulate an investing plan that will work for you to achieve your goals. And we'll talk a little bit about what joining the inner circle could potentially look like. Can't stress enough, guys, you know, still sell houses, but make a plan to build passive income. There are many ways to do it, many of which do not require you having any money to start. If you do have money to start, there's different strategies that you can use that might propel you a little bit faster. But either way, step one, get educated, come to our events, listen to the podcast, join the inner circle when you're ready, and take action. I did a post on Facebook earlier today. Someone commented in a local investing group. They said, what's the number one piece of advice that you would give to somebody who's starting out as investing? And I said, work hard and follow a plan. I said, I've coached over 1,000 would-be investors, people who want to be investors. And the number one thing that I see is that people do not stick to and follow a plan and work hard over a long period of time. This thing is not going to happen quickly. You know, this is not a get rich quick scheme. It's not possible. You know, the only way to get rich quick is probably to hit the lottery. But as most of us know, most lottery winners end up losing their money anyways because they don't have that financial base. All of this stuff takes time, right? You're not going to get 6 or 7 figures of passive income in your first year. But working with a good mentor, you're going to have a path. You're going to have a plan. And if you follow that plan, you're going to achieve your results. Somebody that I met early on in my career, a guy by the name of Mike Herney, he's still around. He hosts a monthly investing event. It was the first one I ever went to, probably in 2003 or 2004. He said something that stuck with me to this day, you know, literally 20 years later. And he said, if you live your life for the next 10 years like nobody else will, you'll be able to live the rest of your life like nobody else will be able to. And it's 100% true. And I will say, doesn't have to take 10 years. Might take 5 years, might take 4 years, might take 6 years, but it is a multi-year thing. And that's why for anybody that joins the inner circle, I've probably paid close to $500,000 in coaching over the course of my, you know, 20-year real estate career. It's why the inner circle is not a one-year program. It's not a six-month program. It's a lifelong program. Because if you're really going to implement the stuff that we teach and train on, yes, you can make a lot of progress in 6 months or a year, but it's going to take you longer to get to where you want to go unless you have really, really small goals. And I know nobody listening to this does. So jump on a call with me at www.agentinvestorinnercircle.com. And if you ever come across a fix and flip deal that we can partner on, that you want us to look at, send me a message at Tommy Caffarella. All right, guys, we'll be back next week with another episode.
Thanks again for listening to the Agent Investor Podcast, and especially thank you for sharing the show with other agents and reviewing the show on iTunes. Every time you share the show and leave a review, you are potentially changing someone's life. To get free weekly education, strategies, and to connect with other agent investors across the country, join our free Facebook group at agentinvestor.com. Again, that's agentinvestor.com.